on stage rocking out stir crazy.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I'm going to be doing a live remote this tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Yeah, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Mandela Barnes's campaign office. We're going to be doing this live remote. I'm really excited about it. It's election eve. So it's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And Dave, hey Dave, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, I heard you guys talking about the gun problem, and I just had the call to share something I learned. If you recall, about a month ago, the former Prime Minister of Japan was assassinated by a homemade handgun, and someone wrote an article about the gun violence problem in Japan. And do you know what the statistics are for 2021 gun fatalities in Japan?
Well, I think
five.
Yeah, it was probably single digit.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, and non-fatal shootings was 9. And they are a population of over 125 million. So this article talked about the guns are not banned. Hunting weapons, everyone can get hunting weapons. They can get rifles and shotguns. Handguns are banned. But to get a hunting weapon, a person would have to go through a lengthy training session that is repeated. I don't know if it's annually or every few years. They have to go through training, and also they go through an extensive background check that includes interviews with their family members and neighbors to assess, to find out their opinion on the fitness of that person to protect, to get a firearm. So that's how they deal with it. And I think it's pretty remarkable that 125 million people, there's one gun death for an entire year.
You know, Dave, I heard something, might have been yesterday, might have even been this morning's news, another record-breaking year for gun purchases, In this society, this can be fixed.
And that number was, I'm sure, in the millions.
Yes, in the millions.
In the millions of guns in a year purchased.
Right.
Yeah.
Sandy, though, this can be fixed.
Well,
right.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, that's the problem with it is that when you look at how much the genie is out of the bottle.
Right.
Without us turning around and actually recovering guns that are already out there in circulation, like I said, I think the number is in excess of 400 million guns that are in private possession, and that there are 20 million assault rifles in private possession. So, wow. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle. And the ability to reverse, I mean, those guns will be in circulation. There's more than one gun per capita in circulation right now. I don't know how many of those are shotguns and how many are pistols, but I'm almost certain that the majority of those are pistols.
How does more guns make us safer? Like the parade shooting, a guy is on the roof. How is you holding a gun going to protect you from getting hit by a sniper? It's a surprise factor, right?
Absolutely.
The guy who went in and shot up the police station, you've got a police station full of cops. They were helpless.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way,
it's the surprise factor.
In a way, the response to this problem in the United States is a bit like our response to the war in Ukraine, which is send in more armaments.
Yeah,
that's the answer. It's a sort of an admission that we have warfare, And now the answer to warfare is, well, just let's arm the good guys more than the bad guys, which isn't going to be a solution when the problem we've got is the willful use of guns by some people and the surprise factor for that matter as well. I mean, someone pops up with a gun, it's going to be a surprise.
But Sandy.
And the surprise means that you having a gun isn't necessarily going to help you.
But Sandy, the simplistic answers, the good guys and the bad guys.
I know.
I mean, you have the conversation.
Well, I mean, I know, but that's an admission that we have warfare.
A good guy with a gun. Come on, man.
That just assumes that bad guy. I mean, the whole thing is premised on a principle that most countries wouldn't allow to exist, which is that we've got that like essentially everyone in this country should have guns.
Right. Well, but we already know that two-thirds of the American people don't have them.
Yeah.
So, and that's the part that always gets me, Dave. We know that the majority of the American people don't have guns. So if the majority of the American people don't have guns, and people can look that up, that's not my statistic, why is it that we allow the one-third of the people to win this argument? I don't understand that. The majority usually wins in almost everything in this country. Why in this case?
Well, no, let's talk about that, because I think it has to do with the willfulness of the essentially the lobby of the people. So because the majority of people in this country favor choice with respect to a woman's ability to control her reproductive system and her body. But so far, at least, they're losing in the political battle associated with that issue. And guns are clearly that. I mean, I don't know what the data is exactly, but you're right that certainly everybody in this country does not have a gun, but the political power associated with the so-called Second Amendment right is unbelievable.
So, Sandy, you talked about, and we can't go past this, lobbyists and the power that they have outstrips the power of the electorate. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there's something seriously wrong with that.
Well, but that's clearly the case when you look into legislation and you see what gets passed in Congress and what doesn't get passed and what the public opinion is with respect to an issue and what actually gets accomplished. Because the public opinion has long been that we have a serious problem with our health care. But our ability to actually move all the way to a solution to our healthcare problem is impeded by the fact that healthcare is fraught with lobbying activity and the power of lobbyists. And the same is true with respect to prescription drugs and prescription drug costs. It's true with respect to almost everything.
So, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Sandy, I can't now move from that, right? I wanted to go somewhere else. But I can't move from what you just said. People, the impact of the lobbyists. And you know, we're talking about, well, election's out tomorrow. Everybody, we got to go vote and vote in the midterms and the midterms this and the midterms that. And all of those things mean nothing if you can't get your representative to do what you elected them for.
Well, they certainly they mean something, but they mean much less.
Yeah.
Mean much less than they should. They do mean something with respect to the social issues.
Yeah, I'll retract that.
Yeah, it means something, but the extent to which it means is severely restricted by money in politics, and money in politics is a broad term that includes the power of lobbyists, the power of special interests, private interests, and all of that is, it's clear that in our system right now, special interests and private interests have far too much influence as compared to the influence of Tom, Dick, and Mary.
So Sandy, you have to ask the next question after that. They're certainly not going to give that power up willingly. It's beneficial to that group that you just talked about.
Yeah.
And so how is there ever going to be a coming to Jesus moment in the society. If nothing else, we see it gets worse and worse. You know, anytime it, you know, you can spend $12 million to run for to become a United States senator, and this is in the not the, what's the word I'm looking for? Easy word, man.
Well, without finding that word, I would answer the question you haven't finished by by suggesting that Tom from Los Angeles was on the phone once with CJ, I think at the same time, and the two of them reached agreement on one issue, which is that there's too much influence of money in politics.
Right.
And I suspect the way this could be accomplished is the progressive movement would narrow the field of issues that they decided to address publicly in their presentation to something as simple as let's handle money in politics. And we might find that there would be a broad coalition politically that would cross party lines and would even cross the ideological lines of conservative and liberal agreement on that issue. If we could get agreement on that issue and get profound action to restrict it, we might then find that the people's voice would, when enlarged, would actually allow for a coalescence of interests that would get things accomplished, because it might overcome so that this majority of people who are worried about health care might actually have the sway to do something with about health care and politics. And it might actually bring people like CJ and Tom into agreement on enough things that were important. Because I think they both agree on prescription drugs. I know CJ talks about
right.
prescription drugs. So, I mean, in spite of personalizing this down to just a couple of these callers, I think it's clear to me that it can happen. It's just a question of whether there's a discipline on the side of, for instance, the progressive movement to take a single issue on, a single very important issue, linchpin issue, and see if we can't get a movement behind it.
Well, Sandy, somebody organized and brought the money into politics. It's always been there, but to the degree that it's there now. And so either we were asleep,
well, I think,
or the people who really thought this thing through.
Well, the problem is that the, like Citizens United, those kind of things can be done by a fairly small and concerted but willful interest group who decides what kind of lawsuits might make sense to bring. And so that's a much less expensive effort that requires fewer.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. So, who's this? Simplistic camp.